digital marketer.
This week, it's Brett Curry.
Hello, and welcome to the Digital Marketer Podcast. I'm your host, Jenna Snavely, and today I sat down with Brett Curry of OMG Commerce. They're an agency that specializes in e-commerce, specifically Amazon, Google Display, YouTube, kind of anything that has to do with shopping online. That's e-commerce, right? I didn't make that up. Anyway, we had a really great conversation. It's kind of one of the first conversations I think we've had about e-commerce on the Digital Marketer Podcast. And I hope y'all enjoy. Here it is. Cool. So Brett, how's it going?
Going really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excited to be at the DM headquarters.
Is this your first time?
My first time.
There's no at the Digital Marketer headquarters. How's that possible?
I don't know.
I feel like you've been around forever.
I knew Russ Hinneberry before Digital Marketer, which is crazy. And I've spoken now at, I guess, 3 or 4 TNCs. And so my first TNC was in San Francisco. That's where I met Ezra Firestone. I think that was the first time Ezra Firestone spoke.
Wow.
So I've been around DM a long time. But yeah, first time at the HQ. So
it
feels great.
So your specialty is, well, a lot. Kind of everything, but specifically relating to e-commerce.
Yep.
The Google Display, the Amazon, anything like that. Tell me a little bit about what you do.
Sure.
And what you're all about.
Yeah. So I'm the CEO of OMG Commerce. OMG Commerce is a digital agency. We focus on e-commerce brands. That's who we like to work with. We do have kind of two primary divisions of the company. There's the Google Ads division. So it's the entire Google ecosystem. Search, shopping, YouTube, Google Display Network. And then on the Amazon side, it's mainly Amazon ads. So sponsor products, sponsor brands, Amazon DSP, which we're really, really excited about right now. And then we do help a little bit with Amazon organic. Like a lot of things that are organic, I believe Amazon organic is fading just a little bit. Like you have to kind of pay to play there too, just like in most places. But yeah, it's mainly those two ecosystems, Amazon ads, Google ads. Yeah.
So when I imagine Amazon organic, I kind of think about Black Hat SEO. Would you say that that's accurate?
So if you look at the organic side of Amazon, I think in a lot of ways, it's where Google was 4 or 5 or 10 years ago, even maybe in some cases, where it is a little bit easier to game. Although just like Google, you know, Google's extremely smart, very bright data scientist. Same is true with Amazon. Amazon's getting better at cracking down on that. So now, you know, where people used to abuse and create fake reviews, spammy product reviews, that's kind of gone away. Amazon's pretty hip on that. Just like in the old days of Google, you create a bunch of black hat backlinks and spammy backlinks
and
keyword stuffing. But whenever you try to trick the algorithm or trick Facebook or Google or Amazon, they usually catch on pretty quick.
Yeah.
And so that's usually a very short run. And so now with Amazon, ads dominate more of the top of the search results, just like we saw on Google, where now on Google specifically, you usually have to scroll a little bit before you see the organic listings. It's becoming similar on Amazon as well.
Yeah. So what is the secret to ranking on Amazon?
So there's a few things at play. Just like on the Google side, Amazon's number one goal is to be relevant, right? So whatever you're searching for, whatever product you're searching for, Amazon wants to be relevant, with the kicker that Amazon also wants to sell you something. But they're more likely to sell you something if it's relevant, right? If they're delivering, hey, this is exactly what you're searching for, exactly what you're looking for, then we've got a good chance of selling. And so it is about delivering relevant results, but Amazon is also measuring sales velocity and conversion rate and things like that. Conversion rate's a very important metric.
Really?
So the number of people that click on your organic listing that actually purchase, Amazon's very interested in that. So not only is that a vote of confidence, but that directly impacts Amazon's revenue. And so if you're going to have one of those top spots for any given keyword, your conversion rate better be very, very high.
Yeah.
Because if not, Amazon's going to replace you with somebody else whose product does convert better.
So when you're looking at an Amazon listing, what are some of those factors that might contribute to conversion? Obviously, reviews. That's huge.
Yeah, reviews would have to be at the top of the list, but also things like product image, you know, product image. And can you include a video about your product? And are you showing the product from multiple angles? And are you,
that's huge.
You know, what are the questions someone would have about your product? And how would someone like to interact with your product if they saw it on the shelf in a physical store? Like what would they be doing with that product if they were looking at it and trying to evaluate if they want to buy it or not. How can you recreate that digitally, even on Amazon? And you have some limitations with your Amazon product detail page, but better images, videos, better description. You know, think about, how do I answer every question, overcome every objection that someone has when they're looking for this?
I mean, it's literally landing page optimization.
It sounds like it's no different. Yeah. You know, you're writing your titles both for Amazon's benefit and for the user's benefit. You're writing your bullet points for Amazon's benefit and the user's benefit. But that's, we kind of been doing that. We started as an SEO agency back in 2010. And so we've been kind of doing that for, for a while. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about DSP. Could you, one, DSP, define it, Amazon DSP, and then also tell me just how to make it work for you.
Sure. So DSP stands for demand side platform. So basically it's a self-service option to run ads. So there's two ways you can do it, or I guess three, actually. You can run it yourself, you can run it through an agency, or you can have Amazon run it for you. But basically, it's a way for you to run display ads to shoppers on and off Amazon based on their Amazon shopping behavior. So what's cool is, you know, Amazon knows more about, for their users, and that's, you know, hundreds of millions now, they know more about their shopping behavior than almost anybody else.
Yeah.
So you can now take things like, are people in the market for organic dog food or in the market for running shoes or whatever. So you can build these in-market audiences based on someone's Amazon shopping behavior and then target that person the next time they're on ESPN or on CNN or something like that. Or you can run display ads on Amazon.com as well. So basically it's a way for you to take that Amazon shopper data and then run ads on or off Amazon.
Holy crap. I mean, like, what could be more accurate than literally something they've bought?
Yep.
As opposed to just like something they like or
Or affinities or interests or things like that. Right. Those are powerful too. I know, you know, affinity audiences on the Google side, when we're running YouTube ads, which we do a lot of, affinity audiences can be great. But yeah, if you have that shopper level data, it's super powerful. And then here's one thing that'll kind of blow people's mind if they don't know about Amazon DSP, is you can actually build a list of people who are shopping your competitors' products and have not purchased. So you can give Amazon a list of, here are the ASINs of all of my top competitors. Mm-hmm. So build me a list of people that have viewed those ASINs and have not purchased, or build me a list of people that have purchased those ASINs. Whoa. So we can, like, directly, we call it competitive conquesting.
Yeah.
We can target our competitors' shoppers. And again, you can run that ad to someone on Amazon.com or on the mobile site or off Amazon as well.
Where would you go to set that up?
So that's all done in the DSP platform.
Okay.
The only tricky thing about DSP right now is they Amazon has some pretty hefty minimums. So if you work directly with Amazon or if you get your own self-service account, they want you to kind of commit to at least $30K in spend, like 15 a month over a couple months at least. So you can spread it out usually. Or the other option is you partner with an agency. There are agencies that will sometimes help you. They'll meet minimums as an agency and they'll allow you to do it for less.
Minimum is in $30K total or like $30K a month?
$30K total.
Okay.
But usually they want that in a fairly tight window, a couple, three months. But sometimes they'll work with you a little bit on that.
Okay.
But you have to commit. You have to commit to that.
Kind of best route, unless you already spend bukus.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are other agencies, and mine is one. But we, you know, meet all the minimums as an agency, and so we can help people get started for less if it's a good fit. But there are other agencies out there that do that as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
So what do you find people get wrong when they first start? Let's say they already have a store and they want to start on Amazon because it's like, oh, I have to be on Amazon, right?
Yep.
What do they get wrong?
Are we talking specifically display ads?
Yeah, let's keep going.
Yeah. I think the best thing to do is to start with retargeting. So looking at, and this is what we recommend if someone's in the Google Ads ecosystem, you know, so they're trying YouTube for the first time, they're trying DSP for the first time on Amazon, is start with retargeting, right? Start with that low-hanging fruit, which I kind of hate that term now, it's overused, but but start with the people that are most likely to convert, right?
Yeah.
So you're missing, even on Amazon where the conversion rates are really high, you're still, you don't have 80% of people that are hitting your product detail page and not purchasing. Mm-hmm. So you can build audiences of people that visit your ASINs or your product detail pages and do not convert. So hit them first. One of the things that we've seen some mistakes is people try to get too creative with those ads. They try to put too much of their branding or too much of their style on those retargeting ads. That's probably not the place for that. We found ads that look like your Amazon listing, to where when someone sees that retargeting ad, there's a trigger there that makes them think, ooh, I saw that product on Amazon. So it's that immediate trigger. So we create ads that look just like the Amazon product listing. So we like to start with retargeting, so people that have not purchased but have been to the product detail page. And then from there, we like to look at loyalty. So what about people that have bought one product but have not bought another product, another complementary product? So someone's purchased the moisturizer, but they have not purchased the color, right? Or the blush or whatever. So we do a lot of the loyalty type campaigns next. It's another place for quick wins. I think one of the big mistakes I see is people create a very basic retargeting campaign, or actually on Amazon, they just don't do it at all, right? They just kind of expect Amazon to do all the work for them. So they either don't turn on remarketing, or it's not a very sophisticated setup, right? They're not thinking about those different audiences of, hey, this is someone who has been to the detail page and has not purchased, someone who's added a cart and hasn't purchased. This is someone who they have purchased, but they haven't bought some of these other products that I sell that they should buy. And so really thinking about that strategy, kind of that loyalty layer.
Yeah, kind of thinking about all your use cases as opposed to like, they looked at the page.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But really to back up, I mean, most people that are on Amazon don't run display ads at all. So that's right. The biggest mistake. It's just, it's relatively new. And so most people don't run display ads.
When did that launch?
So Amazon DSP. So just like with any good ad platform, take Google. I'm assuming Facebook is the same way. I don't manage Facebook ads. They change the name a lot. You know, it's like Google changes the name of different things like every couple of months. So Amazon DSP has been a variety of things. It used to be Amazon Advertising Platform.
Okay.
And it just became DSP maybe 8 months ago, a year ago, something like that.
Okay.
I'm bad with dates, but it's relatively new, the DSP label. But it was Amazon Advertising Platform before that. Now, the self-serve platform, like the audience builder side of DSP, has gotten much, much better. And that's been in the last few months. It's like since July of this year, it's gotten the ability to say, I want to target these specific competitors. Like that just came out on the self-service side. I think it was like July or something.
Okay. Yeah, that is really, really recent. Mm-hmm. One thing I was going to add was you reminded me why I think Wish, you know, Wish.
I know Wish, yeah.
Why it might be so popular. And it's because it looks, those ads, it just looks like something on Amazon. So you're like, that's familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
I know what that looks like.
Yep. There's a part of it, and I learned this a long time ago, and I don't remember who I learned it from, but this idea of a reticular activator.
So this
sounds like super, super smart, but basically your brain is always on the scan for things that are familiar or things that are like crazy out of the ordinary, like things that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
So as you drive by a car lot and you see like the inflatable gorilla or whatever, that would fall into that. This is out of place. Like something isn't jiving here.
Mm-hmm.
Or the familiar thing is kind of like, you're in a noisy airport or noisy room or something, and you think you hear your name. So it's like there's like all this noise, but your name, like something in you is listening for your name. So that's called a reticular activator. It also applies if you're looking for a new car.
Mm.
Once you identify, hey, we have a big family. We just bought a big van about a year ago. So a Nissan NV, it's a 12-passenger van. Super, super cool. But once we started looking at the NV, now I started seeing them everywhere.
Right, yeah.
Like who, where did all these NVs come from? Well, they were there. Now I'm just kind of tuned in to start spotting them.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same idea. If you're running these retargeting ads, rather than getting really cute and creative, how do we trigger that reticular activating system where someone says, ooh, this is familiar? Then they're more likely to see it in the first place, and they're more likely to take action as well.
If I could interject with my own expertise.
Yes, please. Quick. Absolutely.
I love that you brought that up because in comedy, that's something I love doing and that I do.
Did you stand up?
I do improv comedy.
Oh, yeah. So I got to see this sometime. That sounds awesome.
Anything that's not scripted like, I can handle that. Don't make me prepare.
Right.
But something they tell you about like how laughing works and how comedy works is people will laugh for three reasons. One is, if they're surprised, pattern interrupt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One is if they relate. And the other is if they're surprised they relate. And that's usually the biggest laugh. So that's why, you know, the more like personal you are and the more like specific you are about whatever you've experienced and just tell the truth about your own life, that's when you get the biggest laugh. Because people are like, I just can't believe she mentioned like, you know, I can't even think right now.
Careful now. Yeah,
don't want to get too personal.
Yeah. I love improv. Are you Whose Line Is It Anyway fan?
I've been a little bit. I do love Whose Line, actually. I saw them live not too long ago.
Is that right? Oh, yeah. I love that show. It's awesome.
But yeah, I just love that it's a thing about the human brain that works. Yeah. Like, it's just psychology. It works.
Yeah.
In
that totally applies to
thing.
Ads, though. Like, people need to relate. They need to see themselves using the product. Mm-hmm. They need to see something about it that's familiar enough that makes them say, okay, I'm comfortable with this.
Yeah.
But also enough of that surprise factor like you're talking about where they say, but this is novel and this is not the ordinary and I'm going to get something new and fresh with this. So it's a little bit, it's familiar, but it's also surprising. Whereas I think what some people try to do with advertising is they try to be too familiar and then it's just predictable. There's no surprise factor. There's no intrigue there. But yeah, that's a cool, it's cool magic comedy. Love it.
Yeah. And that's also why Wish is so great. I mean, they're not like great, like, oh, they're the best brand in the world, but why their ads, they're familiar.
Mm-hmm.
They look the same as Amazon. And also they're surprising because they have the weirdest stuff in those ads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of it's like crazy prices too. Like, I don't love price as a strategy, but for Wish, you know, they're buying like, it's all shipped direct from China or whatever. So it's, you know, this trendy, you know, millennial sweater for $4 or something like that. That's a bit of a surprise factor as well.
It's one way to make money.
Yeah, they're doing it. They're out there doing it. Yep.
Well, let's talk about the other aspects of everything under the Google umbrella.
Yep.
So we have the Google part, the SEO, we have the PPC, and then we also have YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
How do those all connect? How do you integrate all those with an Amazon strategy?
Yeah.
These are big questions.
I think they're totally connected. So if you look at if someone is going to buy a product online, they're either going to start with Google or start with Amazon. And it's pretty likely though, whichever one they start with, they'll probably check the other two in the course of the process. Now, that's not always the case. If someone's a really loyal Amazon shopper, if I'm a person that says I only buy from Amazon, then maybe I start and finish and never leave Amazon at all. But if it's a product that I'm really looking to research and I'm really looking to maybe watch videos and stuff like that, I'm going to bounce around a little bit. And what's interesting, so one of the things that I like to study and one of the things that attracted me to marketing in the first place is just the human behavior side of it. You know, why do people do what they do and why do people shop and why does this ad, why does this headline work when this other headline doesn't? I love the psychology behind it. But if you look at how people are shopping online now and how that's changed, the journey from research to purchase now involves more touch points than ever. So that there's a great study, Think by Google. I don't remember the title beyond that, but if you search Think with Google and then evolving customer journey, you'll find it. And so they talk about, like, they look at a couple of real customer examples. So there's this lady shopping for hypoallergenic makeup, and it's 125 touch points before she purchases.
Wow.
So from starting the search process, this includes websites and searches and YouTube videos watched and things like that. 125 touch points before she purchases. There's a dude who buys some high-end headphones. It's something like 300 touch points.
Yeah.
I would assume with that, there's also just like he loves music and loves... So part of that was probably just playing around and having fun. But anyway, 375 touch points before purchase. What we see, like 80% of people will bounce between search and video in the process. If it's more than just... I'm buying a spatula or I'm buying a pizza cutter or something like
some
low
functional
consideration. Yeah, just like it doesn't matter. A couple product reviews and I'm good. I'll buy the brush for my grill or whatever. But 80% of people then bounce between search and YouTube. And so I spend more time personally in the Google Ads ecosystem than anywhere else. And it's kind of a marrying of my worlds. I actually got my start in radio and TV way back in the in the day. So I've always loved the creative aspect of video specifically. But then in 2010, really dove into Google Ads and, and search and then shopping when shopping became a thing in 2012. But seeing, hey, how can we influence this journey? So either if someone starts with search, a lot of times they'll start with search, but then go to video, right? So maybe I start with search. I'm looking to buy a new patio door, right? And so I'll start with search. I'll get some ideas. But then I want to see this door in action. And I want to see a review. And I want to see someone using the door or installing the door if I like to install it myself, which I don't. But I want to go to YouTube to see that happen, right? Or I'm on YouTube and Google knows my behavior. And so I see an ad for a new patio door. And so I think, oh, this is kind of a cool ad, but I want to know more. I want to read more details or read about the specs. So I'm going to go to Google search then to complete that. So people bounce back and forth between the two platforms a lot. So they're all connected. So we love looking at, you know, call it a full funnel strategy. We call it our AMP plan or accelerated marketing portfolios, but looking at the different stages of the shopping journey, how do we get the right message at the right time to the right person? And so then being able to connect the dots as best as you can, which you know, attribution, like that's a sticky subject. No one fully agrees on you know, who to give credit to. Someone buys, there's 7 touch points or 100 touch points, like who gets credit? That's going to be a question for the ages, I think. But being able to see the way that all ties together is beautiful. You still can't fully connect someone who engages with Google and then buys on Amazon. There's some ways to do it with tracking URLs Amazon has a new tool. It's in beta now, called Amazon Attribution, which is based on kind of either a pixel or a tracking URL. So that's getting a little bit clearer.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's still not perfect. It really isn't. So basically, you know, one of the things we're also looking at is, let's create some baselines and let's measure lift, right? So we know what our baseline Amazon sales are. We know how much it's growing currently. We introduced this YouTube campaign. We can measure what's going on within the Google Ads ecosystem and within our website. But let's see, hey, did that growth rate change on Amazon? You know, and how was that impacted? And so it's still not perfect tracking back to how it all ties together. But usually if someone's shopping online, they're going to touch Amazon or Google or likely both in that process.
Yeah. Can confirm as someone who shops online.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I do the same thing myself. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So for those listening, I'm on the product team. I'm a host. I'm a personality.
Yeah. Superstar.
I'm a star, baby. But I'm not like a marketing expert. So when it comes to Amazon ads, I did not know. When you refer to the pixel, are they pixeling your product page?
So it depends on the type of ad you're running. So if we're staying within the Amazon ecosystem, so we're running sponsored products, which sponsored products on Amazon, very similar to Google Shopping ads on Google. Those are the product listing ads, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, they look just like an organic listing, but it says sponsored under it. So I'm searching for, you know, organic dog treats, and you know, there's a bunch of organic listings, but also the sponsored listings that are in there. So if you're running sponsored products, all that data is going to be automatically there for you. So Amazon tracks everything within their own platform very well. Or if you're running the sponsored brands, which is used to be called headline search ads, the kind of headline, kind of the display, the banner ads at the top of the search results page, all that's tracked. If you're running Amazon DSP ads, so now we're running these display ads. So we're targeting, again, people that are in the market for new dress shoes, right? So we're targeting those people. If we're sending them back to Amazon, so we're running these ads off Amazon, we're sending people back to Amazon, Amazon tracks that really well too. But if you are running a DSP ad and you're sending them to your website, which we have a handful of clients doing that now, because what's interesting, Amazon makes so much money off of ads. They're now the third largest ad platform. They're quite a ways behind, but they're behind Google. Google's number one, Facebook number two, Amazon number three. So Amazon's a retailer, but their ad business is now, you know, the third largest online platform. They don't mind. So when the ad platform, the display network, it was actually built for large agencies to begin with. So it's a way for them to make money with their shopper data. And so they don't mind if you send traffic off of Amazon. They really don't. As long as you meet certain guidelines, which are basically the same as any ad platform, same as Google and Facebook. So in that case, then, if you're going to run traffic from, hey, I know I built this in-market audience, they're in the market for, you know, skincare products on Amazon, now I'm sending them to my skincare brand, then I would need the Amazon pixel on my site to be able to track that. You can also add that pixel, even if you want to only send traffic through DSP back to Amazon, you could add that pixel to your site and exclude that traffic as an example. Because sometimes people like to say, hey, if someone starts on Amazon, then I'll keep them on Amazon. But if they start on my website, I want to keep them buying from my website and not Amazon. So there's a couple ways to do that. Yeah, make it clean. With Amazon attribution, the idea there was, hey, what if we want to run Google search, or what if we want to run Facebook ads or display ads and send people to Amazon? So we got off Amazon traffic, sending it to Amazon. How can we track that? So Amazon attribution is Amazon's answer to that, but it's not perfect and it doesn't track everything yet. And it's kind of weird. It's in beta. Like, we can get technical on it. I think the beautiful part about it is that it exists,
right. And
it's in beta, so you have to get approval to get access, but it's not that hard, but it's going to get better. The tracking tools, the ability to track that journey so we really see what had influence, it's going to get better. And that'll allow us as marketers to know what's working, what's not, really dial things in.
Yeah, the more they cater to marketers, the more money they're going to make.
Exactly. So. Yeah. The more tools they give us, the more we can see about how our marketing is influencing sales, the more we want to spend on advertising. It's really Google led the way with this, I think, with, you know, Google Analytics, which is a totally free tool, and it's super robust and it's amazing. But they did that not just to be altruistic. I think Google wants to do the right thing in some cases. Some people would argue with that, but I think deep down they probably do. but they make more money, right? So if you know what's working, if you can see how people are behaving on your website and how traffic from different sources behaves, you'll spend more money. You'll spend more money with their platform, and that's a big motivating factor there.
Okay. Well, Amazon attribution.
Yep.
Kind of weird. You heard it here first.
Yeah, kind of weird. I think it's going to be great, though. Like, play with it. I view it kind of as a minimum viable product right now. You know, right. Amazon's getting it out there. Just a quick note, if someone is on the seller side of Amazon, so that's the third-party marketplace, that's like FBA, Fulfilled by Amazon, so I'm in control of my listings, and I'm either shipping the product or I'm having Amazon ship it for me, but I'm seller side. That's where Amazon attribution is new, and it's kind of limited. It's just kind of okay. If you're on the vendor side, so that's where kind of the traditional wholesale model where Amazon's buying your products from you and then they're turning around and selling it themselves. There's Amazon attribution for vendors or for Vendor Central that's actually a little more robust.
Hmm.
So it's kind of, in some ways, can kind of help track what we'd call waterfall, where, because this is what we really want. Maybe we're sending traffic from a YouTube video back to the .com, back to our own website, but they don't buy then, but they do go to Amazon and purchase. That's sort of what Amazon attribution can help you with on the vendor side. The seller side, it's still in beta. It's still kind of coming, you know, finding its legs. But I think eventually it's going to get better. And it's going to be a super useful tool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to ask about budget now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah. $1 million.
Oh, no. I'll never be a marketer.
No.
When it comes to allocation, let's say you're on everything.
Mm-hmm.
How do you recommend?
So I'm selling on my own.com. I'm selling on Amazon.
YouTube, and you're doing YouTube ads. Yeah. And you're buying... Yeah. GDN, whatever.
Yep. Yep.
How would you allocate budget?
Yeah. So that's a super, super nuanced question, right? It's going to depend on a lot of factors, but just looking at it kind of in simple terms is I would look at how my business is split.
Mm-hmm.
I don't run into that many businesses that are like 50-50, 50% their own website, 50% Amazon. It happens. Usually someone skews a little bit more one platform versus the other. So I think it makes sense, you know, if you're a 70% Amazon business, 30% your own .com, that your ad spend should probably go in step with that, unless you're trying to shift things a
right.
little bit. But I will say, a brand that was born on Amazon, that started on Amazon, it's harder to take that off Amazon. I think it's easier, in my opinion, that's just, and we like to work with brands, we like to work with companies that are not just, I'm selling a commodity, but I'm actually building a community and I'm building a following, and this is a sellable brand like a Native deodorant or, you know, Zero Shoes or something like that, or Groove Rings or Original Grain watches, like someone that they're building a cool brand and a following and stuff like that. So I think your budget should go in line with where your sales are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you're mostly an Amazon business, if you spend a little bit more on sponsored products or sponsored brands on the Amazon platform, that'll probably lead to very immediate sales, very quick sales. Mm-hmm. So then in terms of the breakdown, I think it also depends on a couple of things. One, what is your business model? So are you more of a demand capture type business, or are you more of a demand generation business? I credit my buddy Austin Bronner, e-commerce influence, with this language. I don't know where he got it, but it's super great and it's easy to understand. If I'm selling, I'll go back to Grill Tools because I just bought Grill Tools not too long ago. That's more of a demand capture business. Where someone's selling Grill Tools, they're mainly, or at least the quickest wins are, let's just find the people that are searching for Grill Tools, right? We're maybe going to build a brand, maybe not. We're going to grab people that are out there searching for that. There's some auto accessories that fall into this category as well, where I could show a broad audience, like these really cool, let's make this up. I'm not necessarily a car guy, but these really cool bumpers for your car. That's not going to convert most people, right? You almost need to find the person who's already looking for that,
mm-hmm.
right? Versus something that's, so that's demand capture. I'm trying to just get whatever demand is already out there.
So these are solution, almost product aware, but not brand aware.
Right. And the other piece is maybe there's a couple of things about either the nature of the product or the margins where it makes it like, it's going to be hard for me to run cold traffic and to go out and reach new people and educate them. I'm selling a grill brush. Like I make $10 per. I can't go out and run a ton of YouTube ads to get someone to convert on the fourth or fifth visit. Like that doesn't make sense. I need a demand capture for that business. Then you have other products where it makes sense to go out and generate demand. So now I'm running YouTube ads top of funnel. I'm running Facebook and Instagram ads top of funnel, and I'm showing people. And these are people that are maybe they're problem aware but not solution aware. To use the Eugene Schwartz framework. So now I'm educating them. I'm showing them, hey, why is my mattress better? Or why is this watch cool and hip and going to be valuable and why it's worth the money and all this stuff? Like I've got the margin and the ability to go top of funnel. So I like to look at it that way as well. If it's demand capture only, then I'm saying 80% of your budget going to search, shopping on Google, and sponsor products, sponsor brands on Amazon.
Right.
And then most of the rest to retargeting, 10 to 15% go to retargeting or remarketing loyalty type stuff. And then the rest would go to top of funnel. Just experiment with it, play with it. Maybe you thought you couldn't do top of funnel, but turns out you can. And then for like a pure demand creation model, I would almost flip that, right? So there's some products, and I was having a hard time thinking of example, but there are some products where people just don't know it exists, right? I'm not searching for it because I didn't know it was there. I had no frame of reference. There's not another thing like this. Mm-hmm. So how could I be searching for it? So then in that case, it's almost all demand generation. We've got to find people who...
So like your infomercial products almost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so some infomercial products have at least some frame of reference. Mm-hmm. So this is the Flex Seal. It's the spray on thing you spray on your pots, you know, if they start to leak or whatever, you know, or it's the ShamWow. So you get some reference, you know, maybe this is like a towel, but it's not the same thing as a towel, right? So ShamWow is actually a pretty good example. Now they've got a lot of people searching for them because of all their infomercials and stuff. But when that was a new thing, people were just searching for towels. That's not what a ShamWow is, right? Yeah. It's if someone searched for a towel and they saw a sponsored product ad on Amazon, or if they saw a Google Shopping ad, that might not be enough. Like, this ShamWow is way more expensive than a towel. Like, what does this do? But if someone saw an infomercial and they were educated on, whoa, this is how, I don't even remember how great that product is. Yeah. I don't know. I guess it'll absorb like, you know, 15 gallons of water or whatever. But they need to see that. You have to generate that demand, right? So if it's a pure demand generation business where there's almost nobody searching for it, we have to generate that demand, then those numbers would be flipped. And I would spend, you know, 80% at top of funnel and then retargeting and stuff. But a lot of businesses are more kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, so we work with a lot of e-commerce brands. Actually, we're almost exclusively e-commerce for physical products. And so it really just depends on the business. You know, if someone comes to us and they've only done search and shopping and sponsor products and sponsor brands, then we'll focus there first and really get that dialed in and find areas of waste, find areas of opportunity, like really, really work on that, build out retargeting better. So we want to get that bottom of funnel really built out and strong. And then we'll start experimenting with kind of mid funnel and top of funnel from there.
That makes sense. And I kind of see that combo as like, I imagine a journal, right? If you're looking for a journal, you'll find a journal. But there's so many kinds of journals that you really have an opportunity there to like show people why it's different.
Right. Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. And are you buying a journal just like hey, this is a gift for my kid and I just need it to have a unicorn on the front or something like that and I want it for cheap? Or is this more of a, there's a journal company, you may have it in mind, but they sell like really cool, I don't know, it's like a whole life planning system or whatever, where that's not really someone looking for a journal. That's maybe you're targeting someone who's busy and they're an entrepreneur or they're a stay-at-home mom and they need to get more organized or whatever. So you need to hit them with your message of why this journal will help change their life. Mm-hmm. It's not just we're shopping for leather-bound journal, we need a good deal on it, in the story.
Something to get the job done.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So, number one, this has been, it's really great to have this conversation because I can feel my mind being stretched in like uncomfortable ways. And I'm like, oh, there's so much I have to learn.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. But I'm really grateful for the conversation.
Hey, if you can handle improv comedy, you can like totally figure this stuff out. So much pressure. Like so much pressure to be funny.
Oh, no. You don't have to be funny at all.
Yeah, maybe like just awkward or something. Like, does that work too?
No, it's just you tell the truth and you just say, like, you just respond to things.
Yeah.
And because your brain is thinking so fast, you come up with the weirdest stuff.
Yeah.
And it's automatically funny.
Isn't that interesting?
Because you're under pressure.
The brain is a funny thing.
Yeah. And so nonsensical sometimes. But I guess what I'm curious about is YouTube.
Yeah, so
we haven't really touched on it.
Yeah, which how do we take this long to get to YouTube? So there are two things that I love talking about. So I get to speak at some digital marketer events from time to time. Thankfully, speak at other events. If I do that, I'm usually talking about one of two things. It's either YouTube or Amazon DSP, right? Like those are two things because they're so powerful and there's so much opportunity, but also I still think most people don't understand it. Like most people still don't get YouTube. Everybody uses YouTube, right? If you look at the usage statistics, like 18 to 25 year olds is 96% of all people are on YouTube. Mm-hmm. If you look at kids like millennials and Gen Z, YouTube is the fastest growing social media, right? It's growing way faster than Facebook. Like I have a son who's a senior in high school, doesn't even have a Facebook account, not interested. And by the way, I love Facebook. Facebook is still an amazing ad opportunity. But for younger people, they like YouTube better. But then you swing to the older demos, 50 plus, 60 plus. you know, 50, 60% of them are on YouTube as well. So everybody's on YouTube. I think very few people understand how to run ads on YouTube.
Right.
Here's a couple of things that are so powerful about YouTube. You have these amazing intent signals on YouTube, right? So if you or I go to Facebook, we often pop open Facebook with no real objective. It's like we're unplugging. We're seeing what our friends are doing. We didn't necessarily go to Facebook like to see what a particular friend was doing. Mm-hmm. We're like, hey, what's going on in the Facebook world? I just want to check it out and kind of veg a little bit, which is still a great opportunity to reach someone with an ad. But if you go to YouTube, you're usually going for a purpose, right? You're researching a product. You're learning how to do something, how to fix something, how to make something. You're learning how to solve a problem, maybe. Or maybe you're just going to watch music videos or whatever. You're using YouTube TV, which I'm a subscriber and it's awesome. But you've got these intent signals. And since Google owns YouTube, you can also tap into the intent signals Google has about someone's behavior on Google, right? Because I don't know about you, but I behave differently on YouTube than I do on Google, right? On Google, I'll search for anything, any product, whatever I'm wanting to research.
Oh, I put in the weirdest search terms.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
I learned in school, you don't ask Google specific questions, but at this point you can just say like,
very specific.
What happens if your boyfriend says this?
Yeah. Yeah. I asked that so many times. No, not really. I did find out my son was typing in, you know, how to pick up girls on YouTube. So I was like, hey, you could ask your dad, like your dad could have helped you with this.
Yeah.
He was not interested in dad's help at all. But yeah, so we type in all kinds of crazy things on Google. Google knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Google will allow you to target people on YouTube based on what they searched on Google, right? It's called the custom intent audience. So what's so powerful about YouTube is you have all these intent signals, right? You can really understand why someone is at YouTube, what they've been doing recently, what their ongoing behavior is like. And so that allows you to craft a pretty perfect message to them. One, to target the right person, and then to craft a pretty solid message to them on YouTube. The beauty of YouTube is there's essentially unlimited inventory, right? So right now, and again, I'm not a Facebook ad guy, but I've got lots of good friends like our mutual friend Ralph Burns, who are Facebook ad people. You know, the news feed is kind of maxed with ads, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really hard. You got to be really good to get an ad to show on Facebook and to show profitably, and the costs are going up and stuff. There's almost unlimited inventory on YouTube. And so, you know, great intent signals, almost unlimited inventory, pretty low cost in a lot of ways. You're only paying if someone watches your video. So they have to watch 30 seconds of your video or the whole video if it's less than 30 seconds. So you're getting real engagement, or they have to click through to your website. If they don't do either of those things, you don't pay, right?
That's
so it's really awesome. The trickiest part about YouTube at this point is getting a good video, right? So getting a good ad. And so it's something, we got some YouTube ad templates and some kind of free resources that are available to help people with that. But getting the right video, it's certainly not out of reach or impossible, but it is nuanced, and you're taking just your ad that you ran on Facebook, your video ad, and turning it into a YouTube ad. It's probably going to take some customization, right?
Mm-hmm.
So getting the ad correct, that's the most important and tricky part about YouTube. But if you can do that, if you can get the right video and then structure your audiences correctly, get the bidding down, all that stuff, you can scale. You can spend a lot of money on YouTube. And again, it's almost unlimited reach, which is beautiful. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. YouTube, I feel like it is so underused, especially for all the opportunity that's there. I think when it comes to a place that is like a content creation space, like Instagram and YouTube, I think a lot of marketers, entrepreneurs get really scared. Like, oh, I have to be an influencer to do this, but you actually don't have to have a profile.
You don't have to have an active channel, really. Yeah. I mean, you don't need to wait until you have don't have to have a ton of subscribers on your channel. Like, you'd have zero subscribers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter, because if you're running ads, most people click from an ad to your landing page. They don't go check out maybe they'll check out your YouTube channel as well. But I think another thing playing into this, and the reason why more people don't advertise on YouTube, is that it used to be really hard. So Google, a couple years ago, maybe, again, I'm bad with dates, but a couple of years ago, Google introduced some new bidding models where you could give Google a target cost per acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And that could either be for a lead or for a sale, right? So it could either be my acquisition is a lead capture, or it's they're buying my widget, right? So that's my acquisition. And you could give Google a target cost per acquisition, and Google, all things working together, good video, good targeting, all that, Google can often hit that target CPA within reason. When that happened, and then when Google added a couple of CTAs, calls to action, around the video ads, that's when the game really changed. And I remember I was at a, it was a Google Marketing Live event a few years ago when they displayed, they showed, it's called TrueView in Action is the ad type. And I thought, this is it. Like we've been playing with YouTube ads. And it's been okay. Like in the past, we'd run YouTube ads and you wouldn't see any direct conversions, but you could watch brand lift. So you could see, hey, we ran these YouTube ads and now our branded search campaigns are going way up. Or now we're getting more organic search or more direct sales or whatever. Hmm. But once Google, you know, / YouTube introduced TrueView for Action, that's when the game changed. And so that's when we scale with people on YouTube, we're running TrueView for Action type ads. Yeah.
That's super cool. I feel like I remember seeing a talk, either maybe it was you, maybe it was the Full Funnel Dream Team content and commerce talk. Did you mention that? Or maybe Tom Breeze mentioned
that. Tom Breeze, shout out. Good buddy of mine. Love that dude. Good job on that. How did you remember that title? If someone were to ask me, what was the title of your content and commerce speech? I wouldn't know, but it was the Full Funnel Dream Team. That's beautiful. So yes, it's we definitely job. Talked about, yeah, that's so cool. Definitely talked about TrueView for Action in that talk. Yeah, may have highlighted it in the first TNC talk I did several years ago, but I don't remember now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. It feels like just yesterday.
It does.
But
yes.
Also not.
So much has changed in the last 2 or 3 years, but that wasn't that long ago. Yeah. It's wild. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Let's say I have nothing to sell, but man, do I want to sell something.
Hmm.
It would just be great to make money and sell something that I'm kind of passionate about. Mm. I'll become passionate later. What's having like an e-commerce renaissance right now? What product do you feel like if people get into this, it's the perfect time to get into this? Is that a weird question?
So it's a tough question and I'll be just totally transparent, like picking product or doing, hey, like this is going to be the next big product or hey, this is going to be the next fidget spinner. That's not really my thing. Like I'm not very good at that.
Yeah.
I am good at saying, okay, here's a brand that's getting a little bit of traction and has all the right elements. Like it's got this unique hook and it's got, you know, these loyal fans and it's got decent margins and now we can just blow it up. Right. I'm much better at identifying that and saying, let's take this brand that's doing okay and just cause it to explode. I think with e-commerce, the interesting thing is, even though I think some of the golden age days on Amazon when you can just pick a product, throw it on Amazon, make money, I think those days are done, but there's still tons and tons of opportunity and not as easy as it used to be. But I think the thing that I would recommend to people is think about building a brand. Don't just find a product, right? Don't just create a new spatula and try to sell a few of them, but think about, and maybe it starts with one product, but what is one product that I really want or really need? Like this, I'll just make something up. I use these backpacks, but I really wish my backpack did this. And I wish it had all these things. That actually probably be a really tough space to be in. But anyway, I'm going to design this backpack and I'm going to build a following. And this is the backpack designed for moms that are on the go, but they're also CrossFit or whatever. And so I think digging into really specific niches or niches is that's where it's at with product creation right now.
Just looking at the people you're serving and how best to
and
serve
it's,
them.
Exactly. It's so interesting to me. I think the best products, the best companies come from people trying to scratch their own itch, like trying to solve their own problem, whether that's software, right? I've got several friends in the SaaS space. And a lot of times it started where they said, hey, I need to do this with my Amazon store, but I've got no way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I like mastered all these little spreadsheets and these connectors and Zapier and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, why don't we just build a tool? Like, why don't we just build it? And, you know, so that was the launch of their SaaS platform. I think the same is true with e-commerce. Either you're solving a problem for yourself or for somebody else. And that's huge. You know, I've heard the technique, and this is not one I created, but, you know, looking at, hey, what are the products that even the top sellers on Amazon have pretty poor reviews? So like even the best sellers are at like 3 stars or something.
Hmm.
Well, there's maybe some opportunity there. Let's like dig into the negative reviews and find out what are people not getting that they want?
Yeah.
What about this product is not meeting expectations and making them delighted and excited? And then go out and create a product that actually does those things.
That's right? Cool. That's good advice. Yeah. Don't just make money to make money.
I'm not just saying that like so you can be a great person. I think it is more satisfying. Like if you build a sustaining business, I'm on the agency side. I for whatever reason, I love building an agency. But when you do it the right way and you like treat your employees the way they should be treated and you build this culture and clients love you and stuff, it's more fun and you make more money. And I think that's the key. And I think that's the same with the physical product businesses. As you build a brand and a community and a culture and you take care of your employees, you will make more money over time. And you're creating like a sellable asset too, if you ever want to sell it. Mm-hmm. So I say build a brand.
Wasn't OMG voted one of the best places to work?
It was, yeah.
That's so cool. Congratulations. So it's cool.
Yeah, thank you. We won a couple of awards. We made the Inc. 5000 list for fastest growing companies, which was really cool. But the best workplaces, I was more excited about that.
That was so cool.
It was so cool. It's still a small team. We're just shy of 40 employees. And so we're in the small, you know, business category. But we had tremendous responses from our team. And that, yeah, like, that excites me. And that's something where I think if the only thing you're trying to do is make money, you can burn out pretty quickly. But if you're trying to make your people better, trying to make your customers' lives better, like all those things, it is more fun. And you'll make more money for sure.
So yeah, I love that. Yeah. I feel like we should have you on a separate time just to talk about growing your business.
I would love that. Yes, so many bumps in the road that we hit and skin knees and learning experiences, but also some really cool stuff. And I will say, like, building a good company culture, it takes a lot of work, but when it's done right, it's super rewarding and super fun.
Part two will be coming. We'll have to do it.
Yeah.
Well, for now, I'm going to ask the question that we ask every guest before we say our goodbyes. If you could go back in time and tell your 25-year-old self something, what would you say?
Buy Amazon and Google stock. That'd be the first thing. So it'd be like the Back to the Future, you know, slipping the sporting book, bet on these teams, you know, make a lot of money. So I would definitely do that. You know what's interesting? I think what's cool about life is you need to learn through mistakes and you need to learn by doing things and trying things. And so part of me would say, I wouldn't say anything. Like, I just like let my old self, like, you're going to need that. You're going to need to think you're right about this particular thing that you're dead wrong about. You're going to need to stumble. And then that's the only way you'll learn. Like, if I were to go back and tell myself that, I don't know that I'd listen to me.
No. You
know? So I think in some ways I was just like, no, let's let this play out. I do think one thing is maybe learning, you know, what to get stressed about and what not to stress about, you know? So as I get a little bit older, have a family, you know, that there are certain things that I don't get as worked up about as I used to. So I think maybe, like, if I could tell myself to chill in some ways without taking the work edge off, because I've always loved to work and I put in a lot of hours and I get a lot of satisfaction out of it. But I'd tell myself to chill a little bit. Or I guess the real thing is I tell myself to be myself more. I think in the beginning I tried to mimic success or model other people that I saw a little bit too much, and I didn't maybe allow myself to shine like I should have.
Yeah. So, love that. Be yourself.
Yeah. Be yourself.
And make your own dang mistakes.
Absolutely. And don't be afraid of it. Like, I think as I look at people that are super, super successful, people that have built huge agencies, or I got to be around Russell Brunson for a while as he was before ClickFunnels, an awesome dude, friend of mine, just texted him the other day. He's not afraid of very much. Like, he's willing to get out and try things and be wrong and learn from it and adapt. And I've seen that pattern over and over again with super successful entrepreneurs. They're willing to do stuff, not like crazy, stupid stuff, but they're willing to try things and they're willing to be wrong. And they're willing to, like, say, okay, I didn't look great when I did this, so I'm just going to pivot and I'm going to do something else. And it's that test and iterate mentality. I think the best entrepreneurs have either less fear or the ability to quiet that fear more than the rest of us.
Perfect. Where can people find you? Find out more about you.
Yeah, best place is omgcommerce.com. So check us out at omgcommerce.com. I'm also on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is The Brett Curry. Facebook is somewhere. Type in Brett Curry. You'll probably find me.
And OMG stands for Online Marketing
Giant. It does. Right? Yeah, it's such a funny thing. Like, when my business partner, Chris Brewer, and I started the company, it was like a project. It was like, let's just see how we both had other businesses. Like, let's just see how this thing goes. We did not spend much time at all on a name. And landed on Online Marketing Giant for a couple of reasons. But then very quickly, people were like, well, that's a stupid name. But OMG, I mean, no one said that, but I know they thought that. But OMG, the acronym is OMG. And so that has totally stuck. It was not intentional, believe it or not. And then as we transitioned to e-commerce, it became OMG Commerce. And that's where we are.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
This was awesome. And we'll have to have that part two all about growing your company.
Sign me up. I'm ready.
Cool. Well, I hope everyone... Oh, no, not everyone. I hope you, specifically you, listening right now, I hope you have a wonderful day, and I hope you have an awesome weekend, and we'll see you next time, same place. Goodbye.
Hey, DM listeners, if you're running a Black Friday or Cyber Monday special, listen up, because Digital Marketer just released our Canva Holiday Promo Pack. It includes almost 200 templates that you can use to make the graphics for all your upcoming holiday specials and three unique design themes for each holiday. The promo pack is usually $27, but you can get it today for free. Check the show notes for the link to download, or you can go directly to digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates. That's digitalmarketer.com/LP/holiday templates.